I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Chris Trapasso here for another episode of the Prospect Podcast. And holy shit, week 9 in the NFL was absolutely bananas. And that comes after week 8, where we saw Cooper Rush win in, was that game in Minnesota? Yeah, it was. Win in Minnesota in primetime, and Mike White mania begin in New York with a 400-yard game and 34 points against the Cincinnati Bengals, who were coming off a huge win the week before that against the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not a gambler. I don't bet on the NFL. Some friends will text me and ask me, you know, over-unders or, you know, against the spread picks occasionally. But, man, I feel bad for anyone that is like a degenerate gambler that is betting 5 to 7 NFL games a weekend, because good luck with predicting who is a good team and who's not, and who are the elite teams and where power rankings should be and all that stuff. I just, it's been the most parody that I've noticed in an NFL season ever since I started covering the league, or just even growing up as an NFL fan. I mean, look in the AFC. There right now are 8 teams in the AFC with 5 wins. And if the Steelers beat the Bears on Monday Night Football, and I am recording this Monday afternoon, 9 teams. There could be 9 teams out of the 16 in the AFC that have 5 wins. That's absolutely insane. At the top, the Tennessee Titans playing surprisingly good defense. The Baltimore Ravens, or they're 7-2. They're at the top of the division or the conference at this point. The Ravens 6-2, another comeback win, a close game in overtime, winning by a field goal. Great comeback by Lamar Jackson and company over those Minnesota Vikings. They're 6-2. Then there's 8 teams with 5 wins, and the Steelers, if they beat the Bears, can be that 9th team. But beyond just taking a look from afar, what we saw in week 9 was absolutely insane. Like, one of the craziest weeks I've ever witnessed. The Bengals, again, beating the Ravens in week 8 or in week 7, then week 8 losing to a backup quarterback in his first start, and they allowed 400 yards plus yards to that quarterback. Then at home against a reeling Browns team that went through all the drama of Odell Beckham Jr. during the week, they lose 41-16 at home. And Baker Mayfield actually has an efficient performance. He didn't play amazingly. He had one deep ball to Donovan Peoples-Jones that was on the money. Nick Chubb really ran wild, 14 carries, 137 yards, 2 touchdowns. But that game, no one saw coming. And then the Broncos going into Jerry World, the 6-1 Cowboys, and just completely dominating that game from start to finish. Dak Prescott, 48% completion, the second lowest completion percentage in a single game in his entire NFL career. Said it wasn't the calf. I watched the film. I put up a TikTok on the Pick 6 podcast TikTok account. Go check that out. What went wrong? I don't think it was his calf. He was a little bit less accurate than normal, but he was just not reading the Broncos defense. He did a great job on that side of the ball. Javonte Williams, Melvin Gordon, Tim Patrick, the very criminally underrated Tim Patrick, by the way. Teddy Bridgewater, 30-16, and there were 16 points in the fourth quarter in complete garbage time. That game was 30-0 in the fourth quarter. The Saints lose to the Falcons. How about the Bills? The highest, we came into this week as the highest scoring team in the NFL. Lose 9-6. Don't score a touchdown. 9-6 against the Jaguars at home. The James Robinson-less Jaguars. He was injured. Trevor Lawrence went out for a couple, or one series in that game. CJ Beathard played in this outing. And there's a point from this game that I'll get back to at the end of this episode, but that was completely No one saw that coming. They were almost 16-point underdogs to Jaguars, and they went at home. The Vikings were, I believe, were up. Were they up? They were up 24-10, and they lose 34-31 in overtime. And the Cardinals, without Kyler Murray, of course, without J.J. Watt, no A.J. Green, beat the 49ers in San Francisco by two touchdowns. They also lost Chase Edmonds early in that outing. They actually helped me win my fantasy matchup because my opponent got like 0.3 points from Chase Edmonds and I won by like a point total. Colt McCoy won a start in the NFL in the year 2021. That dude played against Texas or played against Nebraska and Ndamukong Suh like 12 years ago in college. He's just bounced around the league and he got a win, completed over 80% of his passes against the 49ers. And then to cap things off, which was the most fitting way for the week nine, Sunday of week nine to finish, the Titans go to LA without Derrick Henry, the heartbeat of their team. To me, going into the week, the front runner for the MVP. And they smoke the Rams that were 7-1 and had cruised in just about every game heading into that matchup. Matthew Stafford had his worst performance of the season to date. Ryan Tannehill wasn't amazing. The Titans weren't super efficient on offense like they normally are. I guess they're not always super efficient, but they're a very efficiency-based offense instead of a high-volume offense, especially through the air. But on defense, Kevin Byard with another pick six. Or did he have another? Did he have a pick six earlier in the season? He picked off Josh Allen, but I do not remember if that was ultimately was a pick six. I know it was very, it led to a very short field. But anyway, another pick for Kevin Byard, Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry. Up front, the Titans are actually playing good defense after they were really bad in the secondary, especially last year. And that brings me to my next point. And actually quickly about the, I brought up the parity in the AFC. The NFC has some pretty good parity too that will make for a very fun final 2 months of this regular season. But it's a little more top heavy. Cardinals at 8-1. They have the best point differential in the NFL, 122 points. And on the point differential point, I need to say there's that old Bill Parcells adage that you are what your record says you are. That is completely false. I'm a huge proponent in looking at point differential. And I'm going to actually write about this because I've done some research. I'm going to write this at CBSSports.com at some point before the playoffs begin as we really gear up for the playoffs in December and early January. Point differential is very powerful in terms of being an indicator of really who the best teams are and who might be pretenders at, you know, a team with that are way under in terms of their point differential, that they have a negative point differential, but they're somehow over 500. And that's not for every team, but in most cases, that is usually the case. The NFC with the Cardinals at 8-1, then the Packers and Rams at 7-2, Buccaneers at 6-2, Cowboys at 6-2, Saints at 5-3. So you kind of have an idea of like that looks like the top six teams in that conference. But then you have the Falcons at 4-4, Panthers at 4-5, the Vikings are 3-5. They could have three or four more wins. They could have three or four more losses. The Seahawks, 3-5.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's just a very parity-filled league, and I don't think I've ever – I know that at week nine, like after week nine, I have never seen so much parity. But that two last points, it is going into week 10. So we could have – mean, all these teams obviously have to play each other. In 2 weeks, we could be looking at it and like, okay, you know, the Cardinals and let's say the Rams and the Bucs really look like the class of the NFC. The rest of the other teams are going to battle it out for those wild card spots. Or in the AFC, which there's certainly more parity with 8 and potentially 9 teams with 5 wins, there could be very well could be a team or 2 or 3 that look like the best teams in the AFC. Like that will start to sort itself out a little bit. It just has to because these teams have to play each other. But at the midway point of the season, I do not think I've ever seen so much parity. My last point for this episode of the Pick Six Prospect Podcast. I was thinking about the Pick Six TikTok that I did on Dak Prescott. Again, go check that out. There's this thought out there, and it's true. And Matthew Collar, who was brought me into the Blue Wire Podcast Network and does a great job on his podcast, daily podcast about the Vikings, Purple Insider. He tweeted on Sunday that like it's crazy that at any given point in time, there's like 10 to 15 quarterbacks or humans that can play the quarterback position at a high level in the NFL. Like that is pretty insane when you think about it, but that's been out there for a while now, like the past couple of years. But I think going a step further, relative to how many of them there are in the field, there are not a lot of good offensive linemen in the league. And I think with that there certainly still are superstars, but if 32 teams, 5 offensive linemen on the field at a given time, there's 160 offensive linemen playing every week. If like when all teams are playing, there's certainly some stars, but I think if you're a team that is playing backups or third stringers due to injury or whatever the case may be. And it typically is due to injury because teams, again, don't have the luxury to just try out different offensive linemen on a given week. If their starters are healthy, you're going to be in trouble. Like it doesn't matter if you're facing the 1-8 Texans, the 8-1 Cardinals. Yes, you can have, you know, your quarterback elevate the team or a wide receiver have a huge outing, and you can still win games, but you are flirting with dangerous territory if you are playing 1, 2, or 3 backups in the NFL. And the offensive line is unique in that it's a weak link system. You can have one star, whether that be your left tackle, your center, doesn't matter, one of your guards. And then the rest of your, like the 2 or 3 other of your starters, if they're like average or maybe a little above average or maybe a little below average, okay, you're fine. If you have at least one offensive lineman that is really, really bad and a huge liability, it's going to make your entire offensive line look really bad. Not every single game guaranteed to happen, but way more often than not, the offensive line being a weak link system, that's going to happen. And we saw that with the Bills against the Jaguars in week 9. Like they had a backup offensive lineman, Ike Butker at left guard, Cody Ford, a former second round pick in 2019. That is just doesn't even look like maybe not even a backup in the NFL. He had a hard time. They've moved their right tackle, Darrell Williams. He's played right guard. He was back out at right tackle. But he's fine. Mitch Morse is fine. Deion Dawkins is fine. None of them are superstars, but they're all solid. When you have two backups in there or you're just offensive line isn't playing well, if it's even one guy, can ruin an entire offensive game plan. And that's what happened. And the Bills, again, came into the game as the highest scoring team in the NFL, scored 6 points against the Jaguars. The Green Bay Packers had some injuries up front. Jordan Love got blitzed so heavily against the Kansas City Chiefs. They were in the game. The Bills were in the game. But both those teams ultimately lost. Again, it's not guaranteed to happen every time. But if you have one or really if you only have one, but if you have one or two backups or just really bad offensive linemen, it's going to spell a lot of issues for your team. And it's like why we see teams like there's just not a bunch of good offensive linemen sitting on the streets. Like there's running backs. You can pick up Adrian Peterson and get a touchdown from him off the couch. Offensive linemen are good. Offensive linemen, reliable offensive linemen are very hard to come by in the NFL, especially relative to how many need to play 160 in a given week in the NFL. So that's just a reminder that yes, quarterback, it's very scarce in terms of finding a really good one, and offensive line is the same. And so where do we go from that? Like what's the springing that forward? I would say there's four teams that would probably be like, yeah, I'm happy with my club's offensive line, like the Buccaneers, the Cowboys, probably the Saints to a certain degree. They're seeing a lot more loaded boxes this year without Drew Brees. The Vikings have been a little bit better up front than they have in the past. The Colts, so there's three or four teams. The Browns, certainly. So maybe three to five teams would probably say, I'm completely content with my offensive line, with my team's offensive line. Maybe the Ravens. The Chargers have Rashawn Slater. They have Corey Linsley. But the rest of the group is not very good. And I think that's what's led to a lot of their, why they have a negative point differential, but they're 5-3. Like, Storm Norton at right tackle is not going to cut it. And they've had to cycle in other guys that ruin an entire play, ruin a series, and can almost single-handedly ruin an entire game, especially from the offensive side of the ball. So about 3/4 of the league or more is like reeling, like, man, our offensive line's a problem. How I'm spinning this forward is you better have elite skill position players and or a really good quarterback to mask those offensive line deficiencies. And I think more so than ever, that's why we're in this era where these athletic quarterbacks that can make a play like Patrick Mahomes made to seal the game against the Packers, rolling out to his right, buying time, scanning, and then throwing across his body with accuracy and velocity to Tyreek Hill to convert to ultimately end the game. So the Chiefs could run out the clock. You need that type of player. You need a Josh Allen. You need a Russell Wilson. You need a Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, who this week is the MVP front runner. It kind of seemingly changes every week or every couple of weeks at least. I mean, yes, Tom Brady just won the Super Bowl last year. But again, he's playing behind arguably the best offensive line in the NFL that has not dealt with a lot of injuries. And there was a period last year in week 9 of 2020, the Buccaneers lost at home to the Saints 38-3, and Tom Brady had a really bad outing. I don't remember if that's when Ali Marpet was injured, but I know that he did get injured later in the season and they had some problems up front, and that led to when Brady wasn't playing his best. So just remember that. But they've this year have not had a bunch of injuries up front, and Tom Brady could sneak into the MVP race, which I didn't know was possible for Tom Brady to sneak into an MVP race. But I think there's a case to be made that there's not too many quarterbacks playing better football than him. And he kind of avoided this strange week 9 where we saw a bunch of underdogs win against teams that were in first place heading into the weekend. So I do think the parity will kind of shake itself out over the next couple of weeks, but I've never seen this much parity in the halfway point of the season. All right, that'll do it for me today. I'm Chris Trapasso. Thank you so much for listening to the Prospect Podcast.